Hi and welcome to another episode of Outspoken. As usual, you're joined by journalists Amy and Sophie Torber. And on today's episode of Under the Influence, we are so excited to be joined by Rob Millsy Mills. Now, for those who aren't like Sophie and I and who were totally obsessed with Millsy when we were 14, Rob rose to stardom as a finalist on Australian Idol in 2003. Since then, he's carved out a successful career in musical theatre and scored himself a role on Australia's longest-running soap, Neighbours. Get set for a fun chat where we discuss bathroom etiquette whilst holidaying with a partner, we find out all the goss on what really happened in the Australian Idol mansion, and we also find out how Millsy caught the attention of his journalist girlfriend Georgie. We also discuss some pretty serious matters involving mental health, so if you are struggling, please call Lifeline on 13 11 14. Welcome back to Australia. I've seen via your Instagram some pretty amazing snaps of you and your lovely girlfriend Georgie in Europe. How was the trip?
Oh, incredible. It was the first time that Georgie and I had been on a big holiday together. So 4 weeks alone with your partner is always daunting, but also exciting, and it's proved to work out really well. Like, we've definitely taken our relationship to the next level. But yeah, we went to some really beautiful places. I think probably one of my favourites, or our favourite, was Kyoto. To going up to Fushimi Inari, the mountain with all the shrines, the Torii Gates. Oh, that was really beautiful. But yeah, going to Tokyo and over to London, and then we went to Paris and Brussels and Dubai on the way home. So it was a pretty extensive trip, but always we always realised. I said to Georgie, every time we come back to Australia, just realise how lucky we are here. Obviously, just economically, we're so much better off than a lot of other countries around the world. We're not fighting for space, even in our cities, and just yeah, we're so lucky to have been brought up here. Yeah, I don't think many people in Australia realise until they leave Australia to go, wow, we've actually... I mean, it's beautiful in London and in Paris, all these beautiful old buildings, but it's old. Everything's old.
Like, yeah.
Everything's new here, and it's, yeah, from all the mistakes of past civilisations, we've done pretty well here. I mean, apart from our lack of love for our Indigenous, we've done pretty well in this country.
Now, you've answered so beautifully, but I want to go back to the fact that this is your first holiday away with your girlfriend, because I went to Europe with my boyfriend last year, and what we found difficult was the toilet etiquette on a holiday, because sometimes those rooms are quite small. Did you have difficulty with all of that, or any funny stories along the way?
I mean, obviously, when you first go to Tokyo, we first flew into Japan, couldn't wait to use the bubblers, couldn't wait to use, I don't know what you call them, but they're fantastic, and both of us have decided we definitely want to get one of those toilet seats. It plays music for you.
Oh, wow, that's good.
The seat's always warm. I couldn't wait to ask her if she used the bubbler, so to speak. But we've been together for a year and a half, so I think we've both had that conversation. Like, if you need to go, you need to go.
That's
the world we live in. Yeah, we're both adults. We realise that.
Excellent.
But no, nothing too crazy. But we were fine on that front. I just love those toilet seats, though. I've got to say, they're fantastic.
Now we thought we'd go back by going back to 2003 when we all first met you on Australian Idol. You were only 21 at the time, which is pretty crazy, and you became an instant household name. What was that time like in your life?
It was fun, super fun for a young kid who'd never been on a plane before. So my first plane flight was the flight to go to Sydney to be in the top 100. So, I mean, I'd been on caravan camping trips as a family. I wasn't like kept in a cage like Fritzl or anything like that with my family. But I'd worked in a pub band for 3 years, like Thursday to Sunday nights, always singing in band. So I sort of already had a bit of confidence as a stage performer. So I wasn't like a singer who's never sung before. But yeah, to be part of the machine that was Australian Idol and be part of the first sort of big reality TV show where I think I started to realise that there's nothing real about reality TV. But I was this happy-go-lucky kind of kid and not very self-aware at that age. It was quite naive. I think I had some self-confidence, but probably not as much self-worth as probably needed to go on a show like that. So it wasn't until years later that I realised, oh, I didn't actually know who I was. Mm. Every time I've done a chat with kids at schools or highly recommend kids have a bit more of an understanding of who they are and what they want as a person before they go on those shows, because I think when I was on there, I was just trying to be someone maybe a little bit. Mm. But at the same time, I was just trying to figure out who I was, which is kind of difficult to figure that out in front of, you know, millions of people who are watching on television. They seem to have had an idea of what the network kind of had an idea of what they wanted for me and for as a character on the show. And I was like, sure, I'll be that party guy, Larrikin, if you need me to be. Like, sure. That's kind of who I was. But years later, I realised that, I'm not really that guy. So I got a little bit more depth, but it wasn't until years later to work that out.
Well, I suppose it's hard because people do forget you were so young when you're on Australian Idol, and I don't know if this was part of the role or it got thrown on you, but you were the heartthrob of the show. What was it like getting so much female attention at such a young age?
I was okay. it was, as I said, I'd worked every weekend. So there's sort of, those formative teenage years where people go out in to university parties and lots of stuff. I worked those nights, Thursday to Sunday. So I never really went out picking up girls. And during that time, I was always the guy singing in the band. And then I'd pack up the gear and put in the car and drive home. So for me, it was like, I'm kind of off the leash. And also, I don't have to sing 30 songs a night in the band. I have really very little responsibility here. I have to sing one song a week instead of, 100. Mm-hmm. So I was like, I'll just go and party a little bit and see what that's like. And I loved it. I really loved the partying aspect. I was like, no wonder everyone does this every weekend. It's great fun. but the female attention was great, but also, it's shallow and I'm still looking. I'm a lover of love. It's taken me a while to find that person.
Oh, and well, do you have any crazy sort of fan stories? Because as we were saying, obviously the girls did go crazy for you. Did you have any, did they stalk Idol HQ or anything like that? Did anyone kind of try and get in there or?
Yeah, there were a few girls that actually came to the house that tried to break in.
Oh my God.
But we had security guards there. So, which was also great to keep the people out, but also they were there to keep us in. But it's okay. We managed to jump the fence. I managed to get all the guys out of the house one night. We went to this party in the city, which I'd heard about. We got in a bit of trouble for it. Obviously, as the ringleader, I also got in a bit of trouble for it.
Was Guy Sebastian there, or was he just the goody-goody in the house?
Yeah, Guy came. I got everyone out. It might have been the top 10, I think it was. Snuck us over the back fence of the next door neighbours and ran out their driveway. We all jumped on a train into the city and had a massive night. It was like on a Sunday night after the show kind of vibe.
God, did people just go crazy when they saw you all? Because you guys were literally sort of, I don't know, I feel like you guys were the most famous people in Australia at that time, because that's the first time we'd really seen a reality show like Australian Idol take off.
Yeah, it was pretty weird. I couldn't understand it. I still find it weird. How people want to talk to me in the street. I'm like, just a guy. But thank you for your attention. it was pretty wild back then. It's still pretty wild, depending on the venue or the time of night that you're out, usually alcohol dependent on how people treat you as well.
Mm.
But yeah, it was, it was, it was pretty bizarre. I think it was the most popular show the country had ever seen. I think something like that. I think it still is. I remember Osher telling me not long ago that still, I think, that grand final of Australian Idol was still, I think, the highest rating show in Australian television.
Wow, that's crazy.
It's pretty ridiculous.
Well, on the flip side,
just
there's
a bunch of kids singing some songs.
Well, on the flip side, there's obviously all this admiration that comes with the love of Australian Idol. This was a time, I suppose, when we didn't have social media, but there were internet forums. How tough was it facing that online criticism?
Yeah, I remember my brother saying, don't read the forums. And I was like, sure, all right, no worries. So I did. and... yeah, there's a bit of hate floating around for everyone. It wasn't just for me. It was for everyone. If you know you had your favourite, then you would diss the other contestants, which I found really bizarre. Mm. I think any kind of faceless media, whether it's a blog or even newspaper or magazines, can get quite vicious because you don't actually have to stand there and defend yourself. So people just, it sometimes brings out the worst in humankind. I remember being pretty disappointed and feeling pretty sad about it all, but had a pretty good coping mechanism of just put that in the box, Rob, don't deal with that.
Mm.
Like most, I think, young people have. Was until years later you realise, oh, if you go to therapy, you talk about it, you can actually move on with your life.
Mm.
So I didn't have those. The coping mechanism I had back then was just put it in a box and do it all later. But it all just builds up, and you know, there's a giant amount of sadness that you carry around with you that you don't realise.
Mm. And following your elimination, you have spoken about that you suffered a panic attack after being mobbed by a crowd on the Gold Coast. Just how tough was that time for you?
Yeah, it was pretty horrible. Actually, it was just adrenaline from the show and the come down all at once, and also the sadness that you've been carrying multiplied with alcohol from that you're consuming and also that other people are consuming. It was a lot. I'd experienced a panic attack at a shopping center a few weeks earlier that we were doing some signatures, some signing at. I'm a quite extroverted person. For those people who don't know what that means, it doesn't mean I'm outward in nature. It means I get my energy from other people, from other sources. So when there's so much energy coming at me from whether it's lots of people, that is actually really quite daunting. So this particular night, it was just lots of people just crowding around. Almost, I was getting in headlocks and people just wanting, like, pulling at my clothes and pulling at me to get photos. Or it was nothing violent about it, but it was violent in nature because I wasn't really consenting to any of it.
Mm.
I was like just trying to walk to, I think I was just catching up with a mate, just trying to walk to the next bar or something. So the panic attack wasn't great. It ended up in a lot of sadness, but I didn't, as I said, didn't really talk about it until years later because I thought, oh, this is just all part of it. But it's not something. And having suicidal thoughts for a split second, and then it's not something I wouldn't say I'm not proud of, but it's not something I really liked. It wasn't a great feeling.
Mm. And you're of course a proud Are You Okay Day ambassador. And as you mentioned, you did bravely share your story on the ABC about that moment you did contemplate some suicidal thoughts. Can you talk us through why it's so important for you to share your story like that with people?
I think it's because I didn't realise just how once you kind of take ownership of it, it diffuses its power over you, and that goes for a lot of things, whether it's a suicidal thought or whether it's I'm not saying it just completely just diffuses its power, but it does help. I think. And people need to know that they're not alone in this.
Mm.
And I think that's the one thing. It's human nature. We want to feel a part of something. We want to feel heard, and we want to feel part of a community. We want to feel part of something. And if you're feeling so alone, you feel like you're the only one, that is a really scary place to be. So I think, yeah, for more people to talk about anxiety or their depression or their sadness, just general sadness is actually okay. I think people don't talk about that. We kind of harp on this idealism that being happy or finding happiness or is the way of life, but some people just sit in sadness. I don't know if you guys have seen that awesome Disney movie where there's joy and there's sadness and there's anger. Like they're all part of us and they're all equal, all equal parts.
And do you think-
so I think the reason I'm an ambassador for it and outspoken about it is because it just needs to be talked about. Like we need to break down the stigma of mental health and also going to see a regular counsellor or a psychologist or whatever you see. I think it doesn't mean that you're crazy. It just means that you like to talk about your issues that you have, and like a sore hamstring, you go to a physio to get it rubbed. Why not go see a psych to get your brain rubbed? Like that's pretty much all it is for me. It should just be in the social norm for us. And I'm just trying to break down those barriers so there's more people that we can talk about stuff. So therefore, it doesn't become more of an issue than it is.
And do you think it's also particularly important to be having this conversation with young men as well? I mean, you look at the suicide rates in Australia, and it's such a huge demographic is men, sadly.
Oh, 100%. That's one of the reasons why I do this, because we sort of have this, maybe it's an Australian thing, maybe it's a blokey thing, I think less and less now. If you speak to a lot of young men these days, they're quite open with their feelings, and there's a lot more men's groups that are starting up by younger people and older people as well, actually, that they realise the importance of mental health. But yeah, the suicide rate in Australia for young men is catastrophic. Whether it's their sadness comes from their upbringing or relationships, or whether it's from gambling debts that they put themselves into, or it's pretty horrible that it's not being brought to the attention of the government enough, or the government is not doing enough. They're coming up with all these ways to what's the word I'm after here? They're not doing any. I don't think there's enough preventative measures being taken place at the moment.
It's so hard as well, because sometimes people can seem so happy from the outside and seem like they've got it all. And I suppose looking at you when you were having these hard times, people would have looked at you and gone, oh my God, he's living the life. Do you think it is hard that, you know, there's that thought in people's mind that someone who's depressed or going through difficult times is usually down and out, that they can't be having a great time?
Very successful, yeah. I suppose.
Yeah, 100%. I think it's always... especially those people. If you have that person in your life, is the person who's always listening to others. I think they're a prime candidate. So it's always good for you to check in on them. Yeah, I think most of the time it is the friend that you have in your friend group that's the one who's always the shoulder. I've got this this thing I always think about when people give their energy or their sad energy or their problems to someone, that's it, you're uplifting it off their shoulders, but you're taking it on. And I know that they're just words or they're just feelings or whatever, but that has to go. So that energy has to go somewhere, and you shouldn't have to carry that. I always think about that with my psych. I always say, you go and talk to someone, right? You're taking on everyone's stuff every day. You have to then offload it to somewhere, like try and get yourself carbon neutral, kind of thing. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, for sure.
Yeah, so I feel like it's pass the energy around, and always look after that friend who's the one who's always listening.
Gosh, our mum should probably go and unleash on somebody. The amount of stuff she's heard from my sisters.
I don't care. Exactly. And whether it's, you know, if you're at a stage in your life where you're adult enough, and your mum and yourselves are adults, and yeah, definitely pass that energy back between each other. But yeah, I can't recommend going to see a counsellor or a psych highly enough. The best thing about that is you don't actually have to get anything back. You don't take on your psychic energy. You just you pass it up. It's free. It's like it's not free, but it's you get I think you get six a year for free from the government, which is bloody great.
That is, I didn't realize that. That's amazing.
Yeah. If you just go to your GP and you sign up for a mental health plan, you get six free sessions with a psych, which is bloody great.
Wow,
6 a year.
That's so good.
That's pretty awesome. Yeah. I think the thing is just like, oh, I don't want to sign up for a mental health plan. That sounds like I'm crazy. Like, you're not crazy. You just, I just think, we just need to break down that stigma.
Yeah, there's so much taboo around it. It's ridiculous.
Mm. Yeah, it's so stupid. Imagine saying you get six free physio sessions a year.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, you bloody use them. Absolutely.
For sure. I was going to say, are you thankful that in 2003 when you were on Australian Idol, social media wasn't as big as it is now? Do you feel sorry for some of the reality TV show contestants that are having to put up with the kind of trolling they get online?
Yes and no. And as I said before, I think it's good to know who you are and have, you know, build up your self-worth before you go on those shows. It is entirely up to you whether you go on the show. It's not entirely up to you what people say about you. I'm kind of glad that I went in there at a time where there wasn't as much. I think people just need to be a bit more kind and compassionate. I had a friend write something on Facebook during the week. Casey, and we're all good friends with Casey, and she was on Eurovision Song Contest.
Oh yeah.
During the week and didn't win, and people were saying all this hateful stuff about the winner. I didn't see any of it. I was overseas. My friend said, "Hey guys, we're all in this industry together. Like, we're all actors, singers, dancers. We're all performers, and we know what it's like to be on the receiving end of this. So just because your friend didn't win, maybe just be thankful that she made it in the first place, or just be grateful, or congratulate the person who did win. Like, stop spending this." This hatred. I don't know where the hatred's coming from. I think Facebook and Twitter and sometimes even Instagram comments and can bring out the worst in can bring out the worst in us.
Oh, definitely. I listen to a lot of Gary Vee. I don't know if you listen to him, but he does talk a lot about sometimes the people who are putting those hateful comments out are the people that need a big hug. Because
100%. Yeah, 100%. I totally agree. They're the people that they definitely need the most hugs.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, moving on, since your stint on Australian Idol, you've had an incredibly successful career in musical theatre. What is it that you love most about being on stage?
I think for musical theatre, I think it's still the most powerful form of storytelling that there is that we have. So you combine the script, you combine the music, and also then you combine dance. I just think also it's live. What an incredible medium to do. That's like three forms of storytelling all in one. And when you nail it, it's sublime. I think there's only a few. I'll probably get yelled at by the musical theatre purists here. There's only a few for me that I'm not a massive lover of musical theatre. I'm just a massive lover of storytelling and good art. And for me, Wicked, I think, really ticks all those boxes. The storytelling of it's the first sort of show with two female leads. It's all about female empowerment, where the prince is the supporting role, which then, you know, spur on shows like Frozen, and Frozen being the first kind of Disney movie where you didn't have to have a prince to save the day. It's the love of the two sisters that is the thing that makes them better people. I think it's a really strong message to show young women and also to show young boys.
Definitely.
So yeah, but musical theatre is, when done right, is fantastic. There's a show like Jersey Boys, there's an incredible jukebox musical, and I went and saw Waitress overseas, which is another really fun show. There's something still to be said about. I mean, we love sitting in front of our TVs and our big screens and binging a Netflix series. But I think the theatre will still thrive in this country. I think I read a stat something last year about it's still one of the biggest forms of tourism in every city every year. Is the theatre that people will keep going to see live theatre because there is the live aspect of it. Something could go wrong at any moment, and also it's thrilling.
Mm, definitely. Well, other than the theatre, you're obviously on Neighbours as well. What was it like being asked to be on such an iconic Australian show?
Oh, it's a dream come true. I grew up around the corner from Neighbours, actually. So about two suburbs away. I used to play baseball behind where they film Neighbours, behind Ramsey Street. So I would see those... the vans where they parked them in the car park and, you know, the green rooms or the star traps, just hoping to catch a glimpse of all the Neighbours stars back in the day. But now, so I've been on there for 3 years on and off. This last year I've been full-time as a character, which has been really, really, really tough. They say that it's a really great training ground for young actors, and it really is. It's grueling. I think the last month I was on the show, I think I shot 150 scenes in 4 weeks.
Oh my gosh.
Which is a lot, considering we usually shoot, you're about 15 to 20 scenes a week, usually. So it has been a dream come true, and I've learned so much from all the actors on stage, like Jackie Woodburn and Alan Fletcher and Ryan Maloney. He's such a gun.
Do they all live up to the reputation? You know, like obviously everyone watches Carl and Susan, and as you say, Toady. Obviously, you've mentioned their real names, but I'm just going to call them Carl, Susan, and Toady. Do they live up to their characters on the show, or are they completely different to what you see?
No, just super lovely humans. I mean, different. They're playing, I think, different versions of themselves, but no, they're just lovely humans who. I mean, from the first day, they're just there to help, like, because they've been like mentors for me throughout my time on the show. I went and did some publicity with Jackie in London a few years ago, and we had this wonderful dinner, and I just said to her, I don't know if you realise this, but like many children, you basically raised me. I would come home and maybe watch your dream when I was having dinner, so yeah. There was my mother, but there's also you. So you're like, she's raised so many children across Australia and the UK.
She would have been a bloody superstar in the UK. Were people just lining up to take photos with her?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They're like, who are you? I was like, I'm on the show too.
I'm Finn.
Now, I don't know how you find the time to do it, but you've also ventured into the world of business, starting your own talent management agency. What inspired you to start the business?
Oh, look, to be honest, guys, it's just me at the moment. I'm just repping myself. I realised after several years paying management 20% of your wage, I went, this is just ridiculous. They answer the phone, they answer emails, and I realised I've got a phone number and I've got an email address. And I'm not bad at the chat, so I decided to just do it myself. I think in the future I'll definitely branch out and take on more people. I mean, I've always been a mentor for other up-and-coming performers and always happy to give advice. I think it's because I've worked in all forms of different media or mediums. So, like, whether it's TV, film, in the music industry or the musicals. So I feel like I've got a pretty good network of people and an understanding of each industry. So I think, yeah, definitely down the track. But at this stage, I'm still too busy myself to look after anyone else. But I think, yeah, I keep saying to my partner, she's like, you definitely should do it. I'm like, okay. But not just yet. I think I still want to work on myself.
Well, talking about Georgie, your beautiful partner, who's a amazing reporter on the ABC, we hear that you may have slid into her DMs and that's how you guys got together. Is that true?
This is true. Yep. A couple of years ago, I clicked on the TV over summer, and I'm a lover of, I'm an old guy, so I'm a lover of ABC. So I noticed that there was a new sports presenter on the show on ABC Breakfast, and I quickly Googled who the hell is the new sports girl on ABC. I think pretty much word for word. And I realised that it's Georgie Tunney. We have mutual friends. And I sent her a DM. Yep. On Instagram.
What was her reaction?
To be honest, it took a few days for her to reply. So I thought, oh, she's obviously seeing someone. But I just said, I noticed that you're new to Melbourne and I know what it's like to be new in a new city. And if you'd like someone to take you around, I'll show you show you some good coffee spots. I'd be more than happy to be a tour guide for you.
Aww.
And I took a few days for her to get back to me. And anyway, we didn't really see each other for about 2 or 3 months. But I invited her to my opening night. I was doing a play called Puffs, which is a Harry Potter spoof kind of thing. Very funny. An off-Broadway play. So she came to opening night and, yeah, we've been dating ever since.
Oh, so she was negging you. I've heard that. I've only recently heard that saying, negging.
That's what I thought. But then I realised she's just really not cool and doesn't even know anything about dating or negging. She's just a really lovely, kind, yeah, she's a dork. I would like to say she's a hot nerd. She has no idea about. I thought that's what she's doing. I was like, oh, she's a bit of a, you know, she's a bit of a, she's playing me here. But I realised she just had no idea.
Oh. So obviously she's a reporter, and Soph and I are both journalists, so we know what the reality of living with journalists are who pick up on your spelling and all that kind of thing. Did you discover dating a journalist? Or what have you discovered?
I think the hardest thing is Georgie works breakfast television, so she's up at 3 a.m. every day. So it's I live with someone who's permanently got jet lag. So that's pretty hard, I think, at times, just for her to keep her energy up. And then there's times she's like, oh, I want to stay up and, you know, want to stay up with you. And at night time, I go to bed, because if you don't go to bed, you're going to be tired tomorrow. And then it just keeps escalating or snowballing. So I think at times it's been hard because of just lack of sleep. But as far as the spelling, I'm also a grammar Nazi, so we get along really well there.
Oh, that's heaps good. I love it.
Yeah.
We do have some quick fire questions for you, if you're happy to take part.
Sure.
Sorry, this is really bad when you've got jet lag because you're my... cool, we'll just fire them at you. So what's your favourite TV show at the moment?
A show that I don't miss is... have you been paying attention?
Oh, I thought you were going to say Neighbours for a sec. What's the best perk of being on Neighbours?
The best perk...
other than hanging out with Jackie.
The best perk, I suppose, is learning scripts and having to learn scripts every day. It teaches your brain how to pick up scripts, which is really, really, it's a really good skill to have.
That's great. Dog or cats?
Dogs.
Oh, damn it. Sorry. We're a cat lovers here at Outspoken. Carl or Susan?
Oh, don't do that to me. That's too hard.
Now, come on, it's their characters, so we're not saying Jackie or Alan.
Susan. You'll see why in a few months.
Oh, okay. Excellent. Most famous person you've met?
Most famous to me is still John Farnham. So I'll say John Farnham. I bloody love him.
Love it. Now, we know you don't need dating apps because you use Instagram, but what's your thoughts on dating apps?
I used the dating apps for a little while, I've heard some really great stories, but I don't know whether people didn't realise it was me or didn't recognise it was me, or I just wasn't getting the matches that I thought I was going to get.
People probably thought you were a fake. They're like, this is not me.
Yeah, I was But I went on a few dates, and I think for me it was make sure you look like the person that's on your photo. don't put a filter on your photos, and put a photo up that actually, so when the person meets you, they go, oh, that's you. You look like the person in your photo.
Well, I've heard you're meant to put up a worse photo. So people go, wow, they're like even better than their photos.
Great, that's even better. Then I love that idea. That, I think that for me, I went on a few dates and I was like, wow, you've not only lied to me, you've lied to yourself.
What a deal break is in a relationship for you? Not looking like your Tinder photo.
Yeah, exactly. Filters. deal breakers, lack of kindness. I think there's a rule I think a lot of people use is if you're not kind to waitstaff, then you're not a good person.
That's a good one. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. I think it's a pretty good gauge. If you think you're above anyone else, the good gauge is wait staff, I think, is anyone in hospitality. If you're rude to the bartender or to the waiter, you're like, you're not a good person.
That's a good one. Another dating question. Who should pay on a first date?
Whoever wants to pay.
I like that.
Quality guys.
That's right.
Yeah, whoever, you might want to, I mean, I'll always offer. But if they want to pay as well, then sure. I think we live in a world now where, I mean, I know that the pay gap is still ridiculous, but we still live in a world, I think, where we need to empower women. And I'd like to think that women don't need to be paid for. I mean, but there's not to say that men shouldn't definitely offer. I think there's still a weird grey area there, isn't there?
Mm.
Men should be chivalrous, yet not too overpowering. Good luck with that, guys. it's a kind of weird area that we're living in now, but I like to think that it goes both ways.
I love that answer. Lastly, thoughts on Lindsay Lohan judging The Masked Singer?
She has no idea who anyone is, guys. Why is she there? She doesn't need... I saw her at the races. I don't think she even recognises it's me.
Yeah, it's a wolf. Come on. We picked you as the wolf.
That's
the second.
Yeah. Like, oh, yeah, the wolf. I remember. No, she's like, I remember you. Like,
okay. We picked you as the wolf the second you were on, the first song. We're like, that's Millsy. As I'm sure a lot of people do at home.
It was a worst-kept secret. Also, I feel like those producers basically told my life story in the first lot of clues. So they're not really clues, mate. That's just my resume.
Now,
super fun time. I think she's good. I think she's a good value though, having Lindsay on there.
Yeah. Got to love her on Mean Girls. We just wanted to finish up the interview by sort of hoping you can help us relive our teenage years. We loved your album Up All Night. I think it was the most underrated Australian Idol album.
I heard that from a few people, not just fans. I've heard that from the music industry people as well. Thank you.
But all the songs were amazing. I suppose because Guy's first album, they were sort of written for, I suppose, any of you guys. But can you sing us a little bit of Dirty Girl? It was our favourite. If you remember it.
I do remember it. But can I politely pass and you just play it in the podcast?
What about a line? Just a line.
Girl, you're bugging me. Oh. Yeah, sure. That's it. That's
excellent.
All I got.
Love it. Thank you, Millsy. Well, actually, I lie. We'll just ask you one more question. What have you got planned for 2020?
2020 looks like I'm hoping to get my UK visa and move over to London and try and get on a West End show. That's my dream this year. And also, finally, now that I have some time this year, finished writing this new one-man show of mine. So I did a show in 2015 called Rob Mills is Surprisingly Good, which was surprisingly good. got nominated for Best Cabaret at the Sydney Theatre Awards. So I'm hoping to add to that, do a new show about my thoughts and my love of Australia. So it'll be an Aussie kind of show, but fun and entertaining and thought-provoking. That's the plan.
Oh, well, we can't wait to see it. Thank you so much again for joining us. We've had such a great time chatting with you.
Thanks for Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
No worries. Thank you. Thank you so much for listening. If you did enjoy the episode, please leave us a review. And also, if you'd like to continue the conversation, you'll find us on Instagram at outspoken_the_podcast.